Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, October 20th, 2011. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Moscow City Council candidates weigh in on megalode protests at Chamber of Commerce Forum. Palestinian justice advocate offers solutions to Israeli-Palestine conflict at University of Idaho Talk. A medical doctor testifies Zem was hit in the head at police brutality trial in Yakima. We're out details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. An expert witness medical doctor testified in the trial of Spokane police officer Carl F. Thompson Jr. today that disabled janitor Otto Zem was beaten on the head with a police baton. Dr. Harry Smith, who testified in the 1992 trial of the Los Angeles police officers who beat Rodney King, said autopsy photos and internal imagery scans caused him to believe Officer Thompson beat Zem in the head with his baton. Hitting a suspect in the head is considered use of deadly force. Officer Thompson is on trial for excessive force and lying to federal investigators about his role in the police attack on Zem, who went into a coma and died 2 days after Thompson encountered him in a narrow convenience store aisle. Witness Russell Balow said in testimony yesterday he watched through the windows of the Spokane Zip Trip convenience store as Thompson ran up to Zem. He said Thompson hesitated briefly a few feet from Zem and then commenced to swing at Zem with his baton. An account in the Spokesman Review reported Balow testified, quote, "The first strike appeared to hit the head and then the shoulders on Mr. Zem's right side. Before the hit, he just kind of shielded himself. He had a 2-liter pop bottle." Defense attorneys asked Balow during cross-examination, "All you are saying is what happened to you some 60 feet away watching an officer swing a baton?" Balow answered yes. Also on Wednesday, Assistant Police Chief Jim Nix testified Thompson had approached him a year and a half ago in the city's public safety building and said he wanted to remind him that Zem had not lunged at him. Prosecuting attorney asked if Nix had earlier tried to correct him about Zem's lunge, which Nix had reported to the media after the 2006 incident. Nix said, "I have no such memory of that." Republican State Senator Joyce Broadsword of Sagal says she will not run for re-election next year after the new redistricting map put her in the same district as fellow Republican Senator Sean Keogh of Sandpoint. Both are considered moderate Republicans who voted against Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna's education overhaul this year. The new legislative map moved the boundary between districts 1 and 2 southward within Bonner County, putting Sagal in the same district as Sandpoint. Sagal is just 5 miles south of Sandpoint. Broadsword said she will keep her political options open, and she's taking classes at North Idaho College to prepare her for life away from the legislature. Broadsword's last legislative session will be next year. At yesterday's Chamber of Commerce Candidates Forum, the four candidates running for Moscow City Council were asked how they felt about the protests that have occurred along the Moscow streets every time an ExxonMobil tar sands shipment comes through town. Here's candidate Dan Karskalin, followed by Wayne Krause.
You know, the people that have every right in the world to protest, as far as stopping traffic, I don't think that's a very good idea. For one, because I'm not sure, you know, they've done a pretty good job of stopping so far when things get in the way. But I like the fact that people are being more honest about what their problem with the loads are now. It's not so much, there are still some people that say, yeah, we're worried about the infrastructure, but if you sit down there during the day when an empty chip truck drives by compared to when these oversized loads go by, you feel that chip truck going by a heck of a lot more than you feel these loads. And as far as noise, they're pretty quiet because I can still hear the peace band over them, you know, when you're listening. much to some people's chagrin, after 10 o'clock, you know, they get a couple calls of the PD after that. But
peaceful demonstration is one of the ways that this country has moved forward. Going beyond that is not proper. And as far as the megaloads themselves, let's define what's a megaload. Is the megaload strictly the product that's going to the Kirrill oil sands? And that's really what the demonstrations are about. It's not about megaloads. Are megaloads half of a double-wide trailer that says oversized load? Is a megaload a large John Deere combine being trucked on a flatbed to St. John Hardware to be repaired to that takes up more than one lane of traffic? What's your definition of a megaload? You know, if I had my druthers, I'd like to see all truck traffic routed around Moscow. We need a north-south bypass.
That was incumbent Moscow City Council candidate Wayne Krause, preceded by incumbent candidate Dan Karskalin. Incumbent Tom Lamar said the megaload protesters are exhibiting frustration with the political system in Idaho. Here's Lamar, followed by candidate Aaron Ament.
I certainly understand some of the frustrations that people have that lead themselves to protests, whether it's specifically the issue of the oil sands or frustrations with the state legislature earlier in the year that chose not to look at the question of the permit amounts, the cost of the loads, whether or not a ton tax could be imposed upon large loads like that. I think there was also some frustration from action at the state legislature this year when they when the state legislature chose to make it a cost prohibitive venture to sue about the load. So I think that really there have been a lot of options removed for people that are upset about the loads coming through, and for some they feel like the only thing left is to protest on the streets. And that's unfortunate. But it's also that stuff is outside of the ability of the Moscow City Council to affect that. It's a state legislature decision, or it's a decision to mine the tar sands that are beyond what we can do a lot about.
Aaron. Well, I'll join the previous speakers in saying that I don't wish to dismantle the U.S. Constitution. I do believe that people have the right to protest. One of the things that this protest has brought to light, I believe, is the fantastic police department that we have. I think that there's been a very respectful interplay between the demonstrators and the police in almost every situation, if not every, in the vast majority of those situations. I think that this light that's been shined on our police department has shown that Dan Weaver left us with a great department, and Chief Duke is continuing his work.
That was City Council candidate Aaron Ament, who served on the council from 2005 to 2007, preceded by Tom Lamar. The four candidates are running for three open seats on the council. Voters will be able to cast ballots for up to three, and the three candidates with the most votes will be in for a four-year term. Another tar sands shipment convoy is scheduled to come through Moscow tonight. The loads owned by ExxonMobil are expected to weigh 325,000 pounds, 210,000 pounds, and 75,000 pounds. They are expected to leave the port of Lewiston in a half-hour increment starting at 8 p.m. They will bunch together after 10 p.m. south of Moscow and then proceed through the city. The 325,000-pound load is 24 feet wide and 175 feet long. The 210,000-pound load is 22 feet wide and 135 feet long. The 75,000-pound load is 23 feet wide and 75 feet long. All three loads are listed as 15 feet high. The two largest loads are expected to reach a point on Interstate 90 east of Coeur d'Alene by early tomorrow morning, with one proceeding east from there Saturday night and the largest heading east into Montana Sunday night. ExxonMobil is expected to have four tar sands shipments on the road in Idaho simultaneously tonight because one of the three loads that left Lewiston Tuesday night is not scheduled to leave the Coeur d'Alene area until tonight. Wild Idaho Rising Tide, which is organizing protests in Moscow, said in an email statement yesterday, those who want to monitor the megalod should meet at 2nd and Washington Streets near City Hall at 7 p.m., and those who want to protest the tar sand shipments should meet at 9 p.m. at the corner of Rodeo Drive and North Main Street near Moscow Building Supply, just north of town. The group is planning to march southward to meet the megalodes. Groups supporting and opposing a dock expansion at the Port of Lewiston gathered for U.S. Army Corps of Engineers public hearings on the project at Sacagawea High School last night. The Lewiston Tribune reports representatives of Clearwater Paper, Avista, and six farming organizations were in favor of the expansion. Plans for the port call for lengthening the 125-foot-long container dock by 150 feet. Supporters say barging creates less air pollution than trains or trucks and reduces traffic congestion. Opponents asked for an environmental impact statement, saying the dock would be constructed in a spot that has less than 15 feet of water. Brett Haverstick of Friends of the Clearwater said concerns about sediment collection are so intense, the Corps is spending $13 million to study how to protect Lewiston from flooding as the levels rise. Opponents also said the longer dock would turn the port into a megalode destination. Haverstick said this proposed expansion is a boondoggle that should be relegated to the dustbin. Expansion supporter Jerry Myers of Lewiston said stopping the expansion would not stop megalodes from coming to Lewiston and Clarkston, since some are going through the Port of Wilma in Clarkston, Washington already. The port expansion needs a permit from the Army Corps of Engineers because the federal government has jurisdiction over any work in navigable waters in the U.S. The Corps will likely decide by December whether it will require an environmental impact statement. 27-year-old Justin Hytella pled guilty in court in Nez Perce, Idaho today to not reporting the death of his 72-year-old grandmother, who died of an apparent heart attack on April 1st. The body of Lavina Hytella was found in the Snake River a month later. Justin Hytella, who lived with his grandmother, said he was distraught and on several antidepressants when his grandmother died, and he wrapped the body in a tarp and threw it into the Clearwater River. Because of the length of time Lavina Hytella's body was in the two rivers, investigators could not determine a cause of death, but they believe she died of natural causes. The head of the Washington Department of Social and Health Services delivered bad news last night to Spokane Valley's vulnerable citizens and those who serve them. The Spokesman Review reports Susan Dreyfus addressed an emotional crowd of about 400 and said, "Additional reductions are inevitable. A reduction of $573 million in state money and the loss of more than $300 million in federal funds from the department's budget means further cuts are coming," Dreyfus said. "This has fundamentally changed us as a government." Dreyfus will resign as DSHS secretary to take a job in the private sector in Wisconsin after this fall's legislative session. Dreyfus said there are three tiers of cuts expected. The strategic, such as cutting the number of individual networks in the state providing mental health services, the difficult but doable, which would include suspending individual and family services for clients with developmental disabilities. The third category was called the necessary, which would allow DSHS to reach a 10% budget cut target. Those cuts would include major eligibility and program changes for mental health, long-term care, and aid for the developmentally disabled. Two of the proposals for a 10% cut include elimination of the state's basic health plan, which covers 36,000 working poor, and an 18-month suspension of all adult pharmaceutical benefits to 500,000 clients. The Spokane Salvation Army could lose its entire state funding of $750,000 by July 1st, which would force it to close Sally's House in Spokane, which is the only emergency foster program in Washington for abused and neglected children. Salvation Army Business Administrator Sheila Garrity said, "Where are the children to go?" Spokane County District Court Judge Deborah Hayes said, "I think it is a shame our state balances the budget on the backs of its most vulnerable." Palouse Wind has reached an agreement to purchase the home of their planned wind farm project's biggest opponent, Roger Witten of Oaksdale. The wind farm, which will have between 50 and 65 giant wind turbines, will be located between Knapp Ridge and U.S. Highway 195. The Daily News reports after construction began at the wind farm site earlier this week, Witten submitted a voluntary order of dismissal. Palouse Wind agreed to purchase Witten's home near Knapp Ridge so he can move to northern Spokane County. Witten and other residents challenged the wind farm due to the belief the wind turbine noise would be detrimental to public health and property values. Witten said, "I'm glad it's over. It's taking up a lot of my time for the last 3 years. I have mixed feelings because I don't really want to leave our home. But with the situation the way it is, this was the best solution." Director of Western U.S. Business Development for Palouse Wind's parent company, First Wind, Benjamin Fairbanks, said, "Given the location of the residence, purchasing Witten's house would be valuable for access to the southern part of the project as well as for storage during construction. The first step of construction is building a road up to Knapp Ridge off of Baird Road." Fairbanks said the wind farm is expected to be fully operational by October 2012 and generating energy for the power grid by 2013. Fairbanks said, "We're pleased to have the issue resolved so we can concentrate on the construction phase and getting folks to work in Whitman County. It will be an exciting year next year." A clinical psychologist and activist for justice in Palestine visiting Moscow yesterday presented a challenge to what he described as the American Jewish narrative. Dr. Mark Braverman of California encouraged Christian faith groups to, quote, "do something else with their Holocaust guilt in order to find a solution to stop the oppression of Palestinians." Braverman spoke at the Unitarian Church of the Palouse yesterday afternoon and gave a lecture at the University of Idaho in the evening on what he called the grassroots movement that will bring peace to the Israeli-Palestine area. Braverman is an American Jew who supports Palestinian land rights and is the author of Fatal Embrace, Christians, Jews, and the Search for Peace in the Holy Land. His evening lecture focused on the role of religious beliefs and theology in the current situation of Israeli domination over Palestinians. Braverman recommended building a grassroots movement among Christian interfaith communities to stop Palestinian human rights violations. He described the violations as amounting to ethnic cleansing and compared them to apartheid in South Africa.
That if the political process is failing, the process that will bring about peace, if and when it comes in our time, will not be a result of a diplomatic and a political agreement, although that is going to be the end point. It's going to come about as the result of a grassroots struggle that bears very close resemblance to the global struggle that brought about the end to apartheid in South Africa and the struggle here in the United States to bring about the end of Jim Crow in America.
Braverman challenged the ongoing adherence to perceived rules of the Old Testament.
We have to change those rules. We have to be able to talk about this. We have to be able to publish about it. We have to develop a theology that says, you know, I know it's not politically correct to say that the Old Testament is tribal, but you know what? It is. It's an amazing, wonderful book, but it's also a national epic that puts one people in the driver's seat. That's what's going on there.
Speaking of the complexity of history of the Israel-Palestine land issue and the very real post-traumatic grief about the Holocaust, Braverman encouraged creating strategies for healing that would facilitate recovery for survivors and their families.
I know that the treatment of choice for a people that's been traumatized is not to lock them inside a fortress, surrounded with soldiers and guns, tell them it's not safe out there, trust no one, we'll protect you. That's not how we recover. We could have a wonderful society in Palestine, shared.
Mark Braverman speaking at the University of Idaho Administration Auditorium last night. Braverman's talks here in Moscow were sponsored by the Palouse Peace Coalition, the University of Idaho Martin Institute, the Unitarian Universalist Church, and other groups. Marie McHugh assisted with that story. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. Isolated showers before midnight, mostly cloudy, low 44, 20% chance of precipitation. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, high 57, a 20% chance of showers tomorrow night. And again on Saturday, mostly cloudy, otherwise low 45, and partly sunny on Saturday, high near 60. Mostly cloudy Saturday night, low 45, a 20% chance of showers Sunday. Mostly cloudy, high 56, currently 55, and a few clouds in the Moscow Pullman area. Thanks for tuning into the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next is Talk Nation Radio, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Green Gypsy starts out music throughout the evening here at KRFP Moscow. I'm Lee Robartis. Rachel Langang and Marie McHugh assisted with tonight's newscast. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Membership's $35 a year, $20 for students. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. This is KRFP Moscow.